Deer Trucking Awesome. What do you think of when someone says tough? Honestly, I think of a Toyota truck. Tundra's one mean mother of a truck with a twin-turbo V6, an incredible going power, and the Tacoma claws through terrain with a taller suspension and lots of creature comforts in the cockpit. Both Toyota trucks are decked out with tons of cool features and tech you'll dig. Check them out at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now when you download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code DNVR, you can make a deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today, as he does each and every week, he's the voice of the Colorado Rockies for AT&T Sportsnet. He is the host of the Drew Goodman podcast, and it's the guy that I love seeing each and every week. One of my favorite days is Drew Goodman. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. How you doing, Patrick? I know how you're doing. I just saw you yesterday. We were leaning against the, or was it 2 days ago now, leaning against the some dugout railing and BSing. Doing well. You?
Yeah, doing great. Doing great. It's good to have the team back home. It's been a little bit cooler in the mornings here. How much do you like that? It's summertime. Usually it's scorching. We're worried. We got some fires and stuff going on. It's actually been good this week. It's been good overall as far as the fire business in the mountains goes. Got to be appreciative of that.
Yeah, with the fires and the torrential downpours we've had the last couple of days. I mean, it was a light show last night. That's a good thing. We need water. We understand that. So that's a good thing. Yep.
We got some trade deadline business that we'll get to in a bit, and talk some World Baseball Classic, some other things. Talk about your guest this week, Lucas Gilbreth, on the Drew Goodman podcast, which I love. But as you mentioned here, you know, we were shooting the shit, as it were, down at Coors Field. I think people would want to know, and I know you've kind of talked about this a little bit before, how do you get ready for a series? And it's a little bit different when they're playing a National League team, but you have a team like the White Sox who they quite literally haven't played in 5 years. The last time you saw them, Kyle Freeland was thrown a near no hitter. So when a team comes in like that, outside of the cramming for, you know, all these players and stuff that you already have some idea about, but what are you doing when you get down on the field? Who are you looking to talk to? What are you looking for at the batting shell there? What's kind of your modus operandi to prepare for a series against a fresh team like that in the White Sox?
Well, I mean, you were right there because we were, you know, kind of in front of the White Sox dugout, and you and I were chatting for a while. And then I saw, for instance, you know, it changes each time. There may be, you know, I try to introduce myself to people I don't know yet. I was trying to get Tim Anderson, and just the way it worked out, and I never got an opportunity to visit with Tim. But I saw Josh Harrison, you know, come getting ready to go take his round of BP. And I had visited with him in the past when he had come through, whether it would be with the Pirates or someone else, and real affable guy. So I went up and, you know, he treats you like, you know, you're his long lost buddy. And so we ended up talking for, you know, a good 10 minutes or so. And so that was great to get, you know, catch up with him, kind of rekindle a relationship. But, you know, you get bits of information that I was able to utilize on the broadcast. Like, he had played against Charlie Blackmon in the minor leagues, and remembered, he goes, man, this guy can really hit. And, you know, you fast forward, whatever, 15 years later, and Charlie's had a great career. And so has Josh. I mentioned the fact that he had, you know, past 10 years of service time, which is, as you know, Patrick, is a really, really hard thing to accomplish and a really big deal for players. And so that was something else I was able to mention on the broadcast. And other things were just, you know, baseball related and that sort of thing. And then the other thing that I did is I went up to Tony La Russa, and I it's not like, you know, we're great friends, but I've talked to Tony many times over the years, and I've run into him in hotels at winter meetings, and when he was a special assistant with, I think, the Diamondbacks, I ran into him a couple times. So he's always been really good with me, and so we talked for, you know, actually I had to break away because I had to get to our graphics rehearsal, but, you know, it was a wealth of material on his team, most importantly, on on the game a little bit. And so all of those things helped in preparation for the two-game series against a team, as you pointed out, we don't see very frequently.
It still amazes me sometimes just going to the ballpark and you get to have those conversations. Like you said, Tony La Russa there, you go, this guy's a Hall of Famer. Like before, you know, I was officially like inducted into the industry, I was in Cooperstown watching him get inducted in 2014 with Bobby Cox, Joe Torre, Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, Frank Thomas. And then here, you know, part of my job talking with him before Tuesday's game. And it's like, this is my life. Like pinch me. Like it's still new. Like it's, I don't know if it ever gets normal for you to be like, all right, here, let me just walk around Coors Field. And like, you get to be a kid in a candy store. And that's always has to be really exciting.
Yeah. I think, you know, absolutely. But you're doing a job, Patrick, and I'm doing a job, my job, your job, and they respect that and understand that. And what I'm sure is happening with you, I would bet inside the division most notably, because now you've been on this beat in some capacity for a while, is it, you know, guys recognize you, like Dave Roberts. You and I will be at the ballpark here in a couple of hours. And you know, I've known Dave a long time, and, you know, kind of, I mean, he's great. I mean, I consider him a friend, a baseball friend, if you will. He'll give me a hug and everything. And it's good to see those people. And then, you know, they respect what you're doing. You obviously respect what they're doing, and it becomes less of a, you know, an idolatry type of thing and more, hey, this is what I do and this is what you do. And you know, we're shooting the shit, and also some information's going to get, you know, passed along that I can use. And you know, you're developing good relationships, and I know how you are, Patrick, and you're so thorough, and I know you've gained a lot of people's respect very quickly, in that they also, when they trust you, will pass along things that they know without them saying, hey, this is just between us, that won't get thrown out on a podcast or on a television broadcast or, you know, in writing. And that's kind of, you know, that may be the neatest thing of all, where, you know, okay, you have a legit relationship and there's the two-way respect and the knowledge that you know what is for public consumption and what isn't. I think the more you do it, to summate your point, is that, you know, we all put our pants on too. Remember when you were competing when you were younger and you were facing a team that, you know, was maybe really good or had really big players in football, and they're like, hey, they put on their pants one leg at a time, just like you do. Well, it's the same thing, whether it's Tony La Russa or, you know, Juan Soto or, you know, Justin Turner in town, you know, Mookie Betts, whoever it is. They're just like us, man. They just do something different for a living than we do.
Yeah, that's a great point. You focus on the pants, not the checkbook that falls out of the back pocket. It's the pants that you care most about.
Well, right. Maybe there's some professional jealousy there, but right?
But they trust you that when you pick it up off the ground, you're not going to run away with it. You hand it back. And so, like you said,
begrudgingly, here you go, right?
Yeah, you have a grip. It's a tight grip. But you give it back, and you're right. There's definitely a bit of trust there. And as you said, you know what to share and what not to share. Liam Hendricks, you know, he shared, I'm not sure if you talked about this on the broadcast, some of his troubles with altitude. Obviously, that was interesting to find out that, you know, he does take medication. And I'm sure a lot of guys, you know, do that, but not so many of them, you know, actually come out and communicate that. And so that was interesting to know that he's struggled with that in the past.
Yeah. And I applaud it. I applaud him on a couple levels. First of all, Kelsey and Spilly and I did have the discussion. Kelsey talked about it initially, and it became germane because I think Kelsey did the piece on it in the eighth inning, Kelsey Wingert. And, you know, then, you know, the very next inning, he ordinarily would have been in the game. He was not. Kendall Graveman was, and good for the Rockies, bad for Kendall Graveman. He had a tough day at the office. He walked three and gave up the hit to to Elias Diaz for the Rockies' victory. But where I was going with this is we live in a time where most everyone deals with something. And I think it is important that people, especially young people, realize that. We have a mental health crisis, for instance, as we all know in our country. And the more people, as opposed to, you know, keep it behind closed doors, are able to, where they're comfortable, share, you don't know how many other people it impacts that you don't know who say, wow, here's a prominent person sharing. And therefore, maybe I'm more comfortable sharing and seeking, you know, whatever help it is, whatever the malady is. I used mental health as an example. So anytime people are forthcoming with, you know, what's normally private information, I think they do it because oftentimes they realize they can help impact other people that may be affected as well. So I applaud people when they are transparent in that regard.
Yeah, it's sometimes that's just the hand that you're dealt, right? I think we all, you know, have something that we might have shame about. But again, if it's beyond our control, and that's just kind of the life we were born into, you know, Mike Trout is a guy now where I'm sure you've kind of, you know, seen some of the reports that have gone out from the Angels trainer, but has a spinal injury, is diagnosed with a rare back condition, a costovertebral dysfunction at T5. That's going to impact him, you know, for the rest of his career. But he's come out and said, yeah, my career's not over. I appreciate the prayers that are being said on my part, but I'm going to be okay. But again, this being a rare thing, there could be people out there either with this that are afflicted with this or otherwise will just say, wow, hey, I'm going through something like this too. He's going through it on a big stage, and they can, you know, be inspired and be given, you know, something to hope for and just give them that hope that, you know, other people are dealing with other things too. And so the more that we are open about it, as you said, I think this, the better it benefits, you know, all of society.
Yeah, 100%. I used to tell my boys this when they were younger, that everybody has something, and most people don't wear a big placard on their, you know, on their shirt that says, hey, I've got, you know, such and such. But, you know, trust me, everybody has something, and you know, that's part of, you know, living and coping and dealing with whatever it may be, and taking the right steps to aid yourself in combating whatever it is.
Yeah, the draft picks that the Rockies have, you know, made here in 2022, the 22 kids, you know, they're going to go through their own hurdles, mental too, obviously, because that's the thing. They've been the best pretty much wherever they've been all throughout their life, and now they're in a room full of those best guys. You talked with one of those best guys that the Rockies took 10th overall yesterday in the booth. I'm not sure if you caught up with any of the other guys, but what were your initial impressions with Gabriel Hughes out of Gonzaga? Because he's an interesting young man.
He's an interesting young man. He's very impressive. First of all, physically, he's impressive. I mean, he looks the part of a big, strong starting pitcher, big legs, big upper body. I mean, he's a big dude, period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd heard that. I like the responses to how he likes to compete. And, you know, he said, I go right after people. I love to compete, and I love the challenge. And if you watched his delivery, which I know you have, Patrick, quite a bit, you know, it's a little bit of a violent delivery right now. I'm sure they'll kind of smooth some things out. But he's in attack mode, and the personalities suggest that he's in attack mode. I thought he was very thoughtful. I thought he clearly is very bright, and I thought that before, and I kind of knew this, but before he confirmed that he graduated in 3 years with a biology degree, both his parents are OBGYNs. He was very comfortable being a young man, you know, being interviewed on television in this new environment. He was excited. I thought he had, you know, the right balance of knowing that, you know, there's challenges ahead, and you know, it's going to take a great deal of work, but balance with that he's confident in who he is and but there's also humility in there. Honestly, I'm not trying to go overboard here, but he was a very, very impressive young man to meet, regardless of whether you knew beforehand that he's this really talented pitcher. I mean, if you just met him and were interviewing Patrick to be one of your assistants on DNVR or potential contributor, you come away and go, wow, this is an impressive young guy.
Yeah, a lot of similarities with Jackson Cox, too. He was the high school kid, also out of the state of Washington, not a university, but a small town in Tootle. Buddy was agog. He was excited about the kid from Tootle. But similarities as far as like being Bulldogs and being very serious and smart kids. He has an associate's and just finished high school, Jackson Cox. So that was interesting. And as you said, really smart, comes from a good family. And you go, well, just because they're smart, just because they're doctors, doesn't mean they're good people necessarily. You would hope so. But when you learn, and you know, this hasn't been talked about much, his family actually adopted another family of four siblings that they were able to keep together. So younger brothers and sisters for Gabriel. So again, good people all around, and you wish nothing but the best for folks like that. So he comes from good stock. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, his younger brother's pitching at Oregon.
Yeah, Jacob, he just got finished with his freshman year. I think Jackson Cox's younger brother went to a camp that Jacob was there and was one of the trainers and stuff. So it's a small community, you know. It's Sterling Thompson talked about, I don't think we mentioned this on yesterday's show with Susie, but he got a text from Troy Tulowitzki. That was his favorite player growing up. And lo and behold, he's like, I don't know how he got my number, but he's texting me. Congratulations. So you just love to hear those kind of fun stories from these young kids who are still kind of, you know, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed. And, you know, the world is their oyster. And it's going to be exciting to see what they do on the field for the second half of the season for them.
Yeah, in the case of Thompson, he hadn't gotten back to Troy. He called him yet because Troy gave him his phone number and said, hey, if you need anything or have any questions, you know, reach out. He wanted to let it settle down a couple of days before he just immediately called him. But, you know, he is going to at some point punch those digits. I love when players give back to the next generation, always looking to help. And when I heard that story about Tulo, knowing Tulo, that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, Tulo does want to give back. Tulo, I mean, he got into coaching, for goodness sake, right? He loves the game. He eats, breathes, sleeps the game. And so when he read or heard about, you know, this outstanding player at Florida that idolized him, not a surprise that he immediately reached out, because that's who he is also.
Boy, got to give so much props to everyone filling up our members only Discord. Remember, you get access to that for just 50 cents for your first month at the dnvr.com. if you want an annual membership, you do get a free shirt from dnvrlocker.com. but for all the folks in the Discord talking about trades for the Rockies, also getting hyped on the Colorado Avs, you know, the moves that they've been making this offseason have been fantastic. And yeah, we know that the Broncos preseason is about to get going. They've already reported for camp down in Dove Valley. And we've got all those articles over on the dnvr.com, not just in the members only Discord. So tap into all of that again for just 50 cents for your first month at the dnvr.com. And make sure you check on one of the 11 of Lightshade dispensaries in and around the Denver metro area, particularly because, not just because, they've got the premium selection of cannabis concentrate, top shelf flowers, edibles, tinctures, accessories, and more. But check them out because of the experts that they have working. You can talk with them, get their opinions, get their takes on different products that they've tried, so they can put the best product in your hand so that you're not throwing your money away. If you're new to this, or if you are you're a veteran and you frankly just want to try something new and don't really trust maybe some of the hype that's going down, they're going to give you the skinny on it. They will not let you down. Check them out. You can also mention code DNVR so they can hook you up with 25% off non-sale items. So that's a nice little bonus, member or otherwise. Mention DNVR when you go in to any of Lightshade's 11 Denver metro area locations. Then you can go to ivaca.tv/DNVR, where you don't have to worry about hidden fees or contracts. You can just worry about hey, I finally got the Nuggets or Avs. I guess you're not going to be worrying at all. You're also going to get the Rapids, Rockies, AT&T Sportsnet, Altitude Sports. It's fantastic. All in one bundle here. CSU Rams, you get their channel. You get to watch some great college sports. Denver Pioneers, you get the DNVR Sports channel that you would normally get on YouTube, but you get it all funneled together, all together at Ivaca.tv. So go to Ivaca.tv/DNVR. Use code DNVR so you can save $10 for your first 3 months. And yeah, Nuggets and Avs are going to be back in no time. So get yourself in the right spot with Ivaca TV. One of the last big trade deadlines for the Rockies 2015, Troy Tulowitzki, the guy we were just talking about a couple minutes ago, was dealt there at the deadline to the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's hard to really figure out what might happen at this trade deadline. I mean, it's hard to even know about Juan Soto. Are you surprised with the Juan Soto trade rumors that the Nats wouldn't wait until the offseason? Or is it really just all about the whole ownership situation? And, hey, get the Juan Soto business sorted out, and then we kind of sell the team. It's just strange that a generational player like this is really getting wrapped up in what could be, you know, the sale of a baseball team.
Well, I guess there's two ways of looking at it, right? I mean, is the team slightly more valuable if Juan Soto is involved? I mean, you're talking about, you know, a billion or 2 billion. I don't know what it'll go for. It's got to be in that 2 billion range, I'm guessing, or at least, you know, is your asset more valuable if you hold on to him, or do you want to streamline it and not have a potentially onerous contract on the books when you do pass it along? In terms of just from the baseball standpoint, the Nationals under Ted Lerner, they've clearly leaked what they've offered on a couple of occasions now, almost to tell the fan base, hey, we're trying, we really are. And the last rumor was, what, 440 over 15 years. And if you've determined we're not going to be able to get this done, I would think you're better off. You're going to get the biggest haul on return if you trade him immediately, because, you know, whether it's whatever team it is, they're going to get him for the final couple of months and a playoff push this year, next year, and potentially the following year, even if he doesn't re-sign with you because he's arbitration eligible. He was last year also. So it doesn't surprise me, Patrick, that they're trying to do something now. And my hunch is, if what I'm reading is accurate, that they're going to get something done here in the next couple of days. And there's so many tentacles to this, Patrick, and we haven't really, you and I really haven't talked about it a ton, but when I did it on my, I mentioned this on my podcast last week, Patrick. Let's take $450 million, okay? Let's just throw that number out there.
Let's just stop there. Let's take the 450. Let's go. Come on. We'll go scout right down in the Dominican. That's it. Oh, there's more? Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
So he's a position player. He doesn't even, he's not a catcher. He's not a shortstop. He'll catch a couple of balls a game, right? He's all about getting up to bat four, maybe five times in a game. That's a lot of money for a long period of time. That's why I keep going back to the other guy, and I don't think this next guy I'm going to mention is going to get traded. But Shohei Ohtani, for me, it ain't even close. If I'm sitting there, if I'm Steve Cohen, I'm the richest guy in baseball, right? And I already have a really good team. And I'm like, man, Shohei Ohtani or Soto, who am I going to empty the, you know, my prospects for, and I'm going to back up the Brinks truck for? Juan Soto's awesome. This is not to disparage Juan Soto. Boy, oh boy, would I love for him to be a Rocky, right? You're talking about Shohei Ohtani, who's a number one in a world of baseball that has only a handful of true number ones. And he's not a good offensive piece. He's a great offensive piece also. That guy, to me, dwarfs Juan Soto as great as Juan Soto is offensively.
Yeah, that imagine it's wild, right? When you put it in that kind of context. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Angels, because they trade Shohei Ohtani. I mean, that fan base obviously is already a bit frustrated, but it's not going to look great. But that's everything that the Nationals' current ownership group is trying to avoid, or rather, it's trying to make sure that the next ownership group doesn't have to deal with that, because that's a bad way. Imagine you just buy a team and immediately, hey, just so you know how we run things, we're selling off all the assets. That is not a great first impression. That's why you kind of need to sort that out. But you're right. I'd rather have Shohei Ohtani. I think he's probably more marketable too. Again, more of an international player. Obviously, Soto being from the Dominican Republic is another country, but it's still in the Americas in general. It's still part of North America. Whereas Shohei Ohtani, I mean, that's across the Pacific. Ohtani isn't a once in a generation player. He's once in a sport player, right? I mean, yeah. It's Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth, Shohei Ohtani. That's it.
Listen, Babe Ruth stopped pitching. Maybe if the powers that be back in, you know, when he was with Boston and even when he got traded to the Yankees, if they rethought it, you know, we're talking about 100 years later, they said, you know what, we need the Babe on the mound every 5 days in addition to hitting in the three hole for us, right? I mean, I'm looking at Ohtani's numbers. Last year, you know these, Patrick, you know everything. He had 46 homers last year. This is a homer game, right? I just messed up and moved my page. He had 46 homers last year. He stole, 26 bases. He drove in 100. I know that's a counting number. He had an OPS plus of 158, 965 OPS. This year, he's been down a little bit. He's still an 844 OPS player. Where would he sit if he was a Rocky? If he's 844 right now, 136 OPS plus, I don't know what CJ is. CJ is the only guy that is in that neighborhood, CJ Cron. It's just mind-boggling to me. And then, I'm sorry, I got to go to the pitching stuff. So,
yeah, that's only the one side. That's where you can compare him to Juan Soto, and then the conversation takes a totally different turn, because as far as I know, Juan Soto doesn't pitch, or at least unless it's a blowout.
So in 93 and a third innings, he has struck out 134. He has a 2.80 ERA, 16 starts. He's allowed only 70 hits. He has an ERA plus of 144. Last year was 141. He's a one. Even if he was like a fourth starter, where you go, hey, you know, he's pretty solid starter, third, fourth starter, really, you know, solid, gives you a chance to win most times out. And he also hit, you know, in the middle of the lineup where you could bat him lead off because of the great speed. We would be oohing and aahing over him. He's one of, Patrick, is he one of the, for you, 10, 12 best pitchers in baseball, starters? Is that fair? Is that reasonable?
So. Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah. I think you do worry about the workload for him more than other guys who are just doing the pitching side, and that's fine. So, you know, you're not getting him at his most one-ist, if I can make up a word, but still, if he were to just focus on that, I mean, you could be talking about the best pitcher in baseball, for sure. I really think if Adam Ottavino really wants to make headlines, he shouldn't be talking about how he would have struck out Babe Ruth. He should be talking about how he would have kept Babe Ruth as a pitcher and still allowed him to hit. He would have coached him up to do that.
Yeah.
That makes for some nice headlines.
I think we're all at different times lent to hyperbole about, you know, an individual's accomplishments. And now the term we all run around with the last, you know, year or two in sport is GOAT. This guy, you know, Tom Brady's the GOAT. This guy's the GOAT. That guy's the GOAT. This guy's in conversation to be the GOAT. We've never seen a guy like this guy. And when it does come up, well, how long will it last? I was talking to somebody the other day who kind of brought up a little bit what you're saying with, you know, is he going to break down because everything he's doing? I applaud the Angels for kind of taking the kid gloves off the last couple of years and go, no, he's going to play every day and every fifth day he's going to pitch. And you've seen him up close. I mean, he's a Greek god, man. He's like, what is he, 6'5", 6'6". He's 245 pounds. He's also the fastest guy in the field. Takes great care of himself. For however long it lasts, that's my guy. I know we got off on this tangent because we were talking about Juan Soto, but Otani's in the same boat. I don't think the Angels move Otani, though. I think Artie Moreno will find every way he can to try to keep him and Mike Trout in the fold and keep trying to get better around, you know, those two guys.
I think you're right. I mean, it's very hard to justify trading a player like that. I wonder how many young athletes look at Shohei Ohtani and they stay in baseball because they see that potential. Again, they're going to be up against it with coaches going, you got to pick one or the other, but there's going to be several that kind of breakthrough and will be given that opportunity. I mean, Gabriel Hughes was a two-way player, you know, before he had a hand injury and then, you know, became pitcher only. But, you know, I think he's doing a lot for the game as far as just doing things that no one has talked about. Like ESPN, let's face it, they don't talk about baseball as much, you know, as they used to, because they've got their deals with other sports. But bottom line, Shohei Ohtani breaks through that mold and you can't not talk about what he does on a field. It's amazing.
Well, he's groundbreaking in a lot of ways. And I think he's made the industry reevaluate how they look at the, you know, marvelous baseball talent who does both at the amateur level. And instead of saying, well, you're going to have to discard one, maybe there are the select few, because it's not unusual, especially at the amateur level, whether it be high school or even sometimes into college. Todd Helton was, you know, one of those guys who was a two-way player at the highest level of college baseball, playing in the SEC, and a tremendous pitcher as well, where you don't take a step back and go, wait a second, maybe this is a guy that can do both. Or maybe at least in pro ball initially, let's see what it looks like with him doing both. You know, great athletes typically, you know, these guys all have great, you know this, Patrick, they get to the big leagues. It's like Carlos Gonzalez. They all have great arms. So they all pitch. 90% of them were on the mound at some point because they were the best player by leaps and bounds. So when you weren't playing shortstop, you know, you were on the mound. Trevor Story closed games when he was in high school. He was 95 on the mound. If you and I were to go down and catch Arapahoe playing Heritage High School and we saw a guy 95 on the mound, you know, if we were scouts, we're calling somebody and saying, hey, I got a high school kid who's throwing 95. Oh, no, by the way, I guess he's the best hitter on the field also. So it's not unusual, but I do think the industry is going to look at certain players and say, well, let's see. I think the innovative ones will. We'll look and say, let's see how far this guy can go in trying to do both.
I think Brad Hopp was one of those guys too, right?
Brad Hopp absolutely was one of those guys.
Corey Sullivan says that he was probably one of the – actually, Corey Sullivan was also a really good pitcher too, but I think he talked about Hopp a lot.
Yeah, Patrick, Corey for Wake Forest started the ACC championship game. He's a starter. Corey was tremendous on the mound. He also was obviously a really, really good offensive player and a really good center fielder. These guys are the best, and if you're the best, typically, you know, you were athletic enough and had the arm strength and so on that you were put on the mound also. I mean, there's a long, long list of guys. Joey Gallo, the stories of him on the mound growing up in Vegas. I've heard Bryce Harper tell the stories. I've heard Chris Bryant tell the stories. I mean, you know how big and strong he is and what a, you know, great arm he has in the outfield. I don't know. You know, maybe Joey Gallo is one of those guys that maybe he's a closer. Remember Brooks Kieschnick, who was a late inning guy for a while with Milwaukee, but he also could hit.
He played with the Rockies for a minute too.
He played for, yeah.
Very briefly, yeah.
Yeah. I think for 45 seconds. I don't know if you can even call it a minute.
Yeah. That's probably about right. Yeah, that's one of those names too. You go back and you say, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, Texas, right? University of Texas, I want to say.
Yeah, Texas. Pat, forgive me, Patrick. I'm like got diarrhea of the mouth going now. You got me going on something. So I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts. I mean, these guys, you know, obviously are legends, Kornheiser and Wilbon, PTI, and I listened to that religiously. And they had Theo Epstein on, Patrick, I think it was in Monday's show, a couple of days ago. And, you know, Theo, who's going to go to the Hall of Fame for what, you know, orchestrating the turnaround in Boston and ultimately the turnaround with the Cubs, is now working in Major League Baseball, you know, trying to, you know, get the game more exciting, get people flocking back to baseball. And, you know, he was talking about all their studies, all their research. People want more action. They don't want the game to take as long. More doubles, triples, homers, more athleticism on display. These are his words, right? Well, you and I have been, you know, jumping around enthusiastically talking about Shohei Ohtani. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr., I'm hoping he's getting close to being back. I'm hoping he plays against the Rockies next week when Colorado is in San Diego. These are guys that if you're young, if you're middle-aged, if you've been watching baseball for 70 years, your eyes are going to be on the Ohtanis and the Tatises of the world. And so the more guys that are really unique, man, we have to celebrate those guys and make them, you know, not necessarily unicorns, but maybe find the next guy that can approach what Ohtani's doing.
And if Theo Epstein is at the helm, and we know he's working with Commissioner Rob Manfred, that could be his third miracle, really. You know, does it for the Red Sox, breaks the curse, does it for the Cubs after 100 years, and then maybe gets baseball back to being that national pastime, that top sport. It'll be hard to, you know, overturn NFL, but maybe baseball goes in and gets that second spot back from the NBA and, you know, really becomes part of the cultural zeitgeist once again.
Yeah,
he's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know, I think football will be king for a variety of reasons. But to me, that's of less importance in how you necessarily rank them. But to get the game and have people looking at the game, young people particularly, looking at the game and going, man, that's fun. I want to watch that. The Padres are playing the Rockies tonight. I want to see that game because it's baseball's fun. It's going to be entertaining. There's going to be, you know, several players on display that I really want to see. And yeah, I hope, you know, I hope he's able to accomplish that and keep moving this game forward because you and I, we study it every day and we do see areas where and individuals that are making this game, I think, better. And we have to continue along that path, getting great athletes to stay in the sport of baseball and to really be able to see a full utilization of their skills.
It would not surprise me if Shohei Ohtani would be an amazing rugby player. I don't think that day will ever come. We hope it doesn't, right? We hope that he doesn't have any kind of freak injuries that allows him to play rugby, but not baseball. It doesn't make sense. But what does make a lot of sense is the American Raptors. They're Rugby Town USA's newest team. They've got athletes who've already competed at the highest level of their respected sports, baseball, wrestling, soccer, track and field. We're talking serious, serious athletes. They're learning the game of rugby. You can learn it too. You can go to the DNVR Rugby Podcast, hit the subscribe button to hear Colton Strickler with some amazing interviews with players and coaches and teach you a little bit about the game so you can make some really good bets on this year's Super Rugby. Go to AmericanRaptors.com where you can also get some free tickets. That's right, free tickets to a game down at Infinity Park in Glendale. They are hooking you up. We want to hook you up. Go to DNVRRugby.com. Check out more about the American Raptors and AmericanRaptors.com. August 2nd is the trade deadline. I think it's 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time that will go down. And, you know, the Rockies they're getting phone calls about their guys. You talk a little bit about it on this week's Drew Goodman podcast where you had Lucas Gilbreth on. We'll get to that in a bit. I just wanted to kind of see if you could rank some of the value of the players that basically have less than a year and a half remaining. Like, you got a couple free agents, we know. Charlie Blackmon, he's got 1 year left on his deal. I don't really think, you know, he wants to go anywhere. I also think I could see this offseason the Rockies maybe signing him to a little 2-year extension. He's turned the clock back. Is that something that you see as being a possibility? As you know, 2023 is not the final year for Charlie Blackmon. That maybe, you know, he's got a couple more years left. And again, it's partially the Rockies have to make that decision. Charlie has to decide he wants to stick around for it. But is that something that you could possibly see this offseason?
Absolutely. We understand, you know, it's easy to criticize, and I don't want to come off here as, oh, he's just being, you know, the hopeless homer and a shill for the organization. We'd all want to work for a guy that, or woman or company that's really loyal. And oftentimes the Rockies are criticized, and Dick Monfort specifically is criticized for being too loyal. You know, is that possibly been a detriment at times in the past? Maybe. And I think Dick, if he was sitting here, would probably say, yeah, you know, maybe that has been in certain cases. Specific now to Charlie Blackmon, first of all, he has a note. He's a 10-5 guy, so he can't be traded without his blessing. I don't think Charlie wants to be traded. Charlie has turned back the clock this year, to your great point, and he has his option next year. You know he's going to come back. What do we know about Charlie? He's still a very good player. He's been their second best offensive player this year. He takes phenomenal, in capital letters, care of himself. And so, yeah, I could see the Rockies going to Charlie and saying, hey, listen, let's extend it by a year, or maybe have a mutual option for 2024. Absolutely. I definitely could see that, because, you know, he'd be more of a DH. He's still, you know, this year he's DH quite a bit. So I could see that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, that sounds fair. Herman Marquez, another guy who has more than a year and a half on the books, club option of 2024, it'll likely get picked up. So he also has 2 years remaining, so he's a little bit farther away. We know that GMs for a couple of years now have been kind of picking up the phone, calling him. Elias Diaz has 2 more years after this one. Same with Garrett Hampson before he hits free agency. But other than that, you got about 11 guys that potentially, again, are going to either be free agents after this year or at the end of the 2023 season, which, again, teams would rather have a player not just for a couple weeks, 2 months essentially, August and September, get an extra year on top of that. You're going to get back a better haul of prospects or, back end of the bullpen kind of guy that might not fit that team's roster, whatever it may be. So you could maybe even get some major leaguers. But of the 11 guys, I mean, it's really Crone and Bard probably would, if we were ranking them, that would have the most value and probably bring back the most as far as prospect capital goes, do you think?
I think the guy that would bring back the most capital is the guy you initially mentioned, and that's Hermann. I also think there's no way in the world the Rockies would trade Hermann. The Rockies, as we all know, are in the most unique situation of the 30 teams in baseball, in that they're never going to be competitive for a legitimate, when I say legitimate, a guy that's a pitcher, a starting pitcher that is getting a number of offers. And we know why. We don't have to go down that street for the 7 millionth time.
No, we don't.
And therefore, Hermann, who has a very, team-friendly contract in this day and age, and, you know, the Rockies did a good job of locking up Freeland and Senzatella, and they want to build around these guys. Now, quite honestly, overall, the starting pitching has underachieved quite a bit this year based on what they had hoped, and that is in large measure why the Rockies are 9 games under 500 right now. But they're not trading Hermann. So to take that next grouping that you bring out, I would think, yeah, Bard and or Crone, one or the other, would bring back the most. What that is, I don't know. They don't call me and say, hey, we're offering our number 2 and number 4 prospect, you know, for CJ Crone for, a year and 2 months. We're going to offer our number 5 and number 11 prospect for 2 months of Daniel Bard. There's going to be a lot of teams interested. Now, for the Rockies, we can debate this all day, and people can debate this, that the Rockies feel like they're closer than they actually are. And I think they believe that they need to keep CJ Cron because, again, team-friendly deal, $14 million roughly over 2 years, and he's produced at a much higher clip at that, playing every day in the middle of the lineup. He's going to be a 30-plus homer guy and a 100-plus RBI guy. And in the case of Daniel Bard, that's more unique because he's in his late 30s, but he still throws like he's got the arm of a 27-year-old. And he's been great this year. Not good. He's been great. He really has. And all the metrics would suggest that. I threw out on my podcast, as you know, Patrick, because you're always the first listener, that could they risk, you know, trading Daniel Bard, trying to get a couple prospects back, and then, you know, going all in trying to re-sign him like the Yankees did famously with Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs. It worked out for the Cubs. They won a World Series. The Yankees got Gleyber Torres, most notably, and then they were able to sign him the next year. Well, the Yankees, probably one of the, you know, two most unique franchises in baseball. You know, if Bard were to be traded, is there any guarantee they get him back? Is it smart to get him back unless you really believe you can be a championship caliber type team next year? Because those are the teams that, you know, need the bona fide closer. I don't know. Knowing the Rockies, as we all do, my hunch is they're going to do everything they can probably to extend Bard.
Yeah, and they obviously like what he's able to do with the younger guys in the bullpen, even some of the veteran guys. I mean, he's a coach out there in the bullpen. So there's a guy like Jolys Chacín, who, again, with your guest, Lucas Gilbreth on the podcast, I won't spoil anything, but the advice that he gave Gilbreth when pitching to Albert Pujols was fantastic. So again, just that alone is worth downloading the podcast. Yeah. Cron, he's got another year of team control. So of course teams would probably pay a little bit more for that. Next tier of guys, I mean, it that's really where it gets tight. There's still another really quality tier. Jose Iglesias, Chad Kuhl, both free agents after this season. And then Randall Grichuk's only owed $6 million next year. Robert Stevenson is going in his final year of arbitration before free agency in 2024. So he'll make about $2 million. So those are all kind of guys in the middle area. And then, you know, Jose Urania, who just arrived, is going to be a free agent after the year. Same with Carlos Estevez, Jolys Chacín. So, I mean, all of those guys are in that group of, well, you know, they're not a future part. You're not talking about some of these guys being on the roster in 2024, 25, 26, like Freeland, McMahon, Bryant, Marquez, Senzatella, et cetera. So, you know, you have to have those discussions, but, you know, team that's in need, I think any of those number of those guys, I think would be helpful in a stretch run and going deep into the postseason.
Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff you bring out there with names. I want to start with Jose Urania.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the Rockies, fingers crossed, have caught a little bit of lightning in a bottle because he's made 4 starts now. And I know he gave up in the 4th inning, Patrick. He gave up some runs to Milwaukee. I didn't think the pitch was that bad. They got hit out. I think it was Renfro, correct me if I'm wrong, they hit the ball out. But his first 3 innings were dominant again. Didn't even walk anyone. And I think it's twofold. The Rockies have given an opportunity to Urania, which I'm sure he's appreciative of. And also now pitching on a regular basis at Coors Field at altitude maybe comes away going, hey, everything I've read, and I had pitched there before, but everything you read about, oh, you can't pitch here, and then you're talking to guys that have done it now for a while, and in, you know, Herman, in Senzatella, in Kyle Freeland, and you say, wait a second, I can pitch here, I can be successful here, and maybe the Rockies look at it and say, well, let's give a, you know, an affordable, you know, 2-year deal to a guy that's all of a sudden become a journeyman. And you've learned about him. And one of the things that you and I have learned, in addition to the Rockies, this young man still young in Urania, has a phenomenal work ethic. So you're not worried about, okay, if you give him, you know, a few bucks, is he going to, you know, be content? No, I mean, this guy's a workout maniac and a really focused guy who, oh, by the way, still throws 97 mile an hour sinkers. So you can't have enough starting pitching. I like that. Going back to Grichuk, Grichuk's an interesting one. I didn't bring him up on the podcast. Which way do you go with that? Because at some point, you do have to clear opportunity for the next wave. And that's why we haven't gotten to him yet. I know you're going to. With Jose Iglesias, Jose's had a really good year. Again, you're not getting a haul back for him, but you get something back and clear space for Ezequiel Tovar. Even this year to come up and start, you know, start to hopefully, you know, learn at the big league level and be the big leaguer that they hope he can be.
Yeah. A lot of interesting pieces that could go out there. And to your point with Urania, yeah, he's 30 years old, but great shape. And yeah, he was the first guy in the clubhouse on Tuesday. Cause you know this, cause you were living it. Got the game in Milwaukee Monday night. You're flying into Denver. I think a couple of the guys said, like, hey, got to bed at 2 a.m., whatever it was. Urania, first guy in the clubhouse there on Tuesday. So hard worker. Hey, you bring him back. And we know Ryan Feltner's doing some things now. He could be a future piece going forward. That's six guys in the rotation. Does Austin Gomber go on the trade block? Does Bill Schmidt do something interesting there? I mean, that's kind of out in left field a little bit, but yeah, it's worth bringing up.
You know what? For me, Patrick, and I'm not the GM, and these guys study it every day. We study from a different perspective. I'm not trading any starting pitching that has ability.
Yeah.
Every time the Dodgers are here tonight, we're gonna be, you know, all on the Dodgers, you and me, for the next 4 days, right? And then a couple weeks later, next time we play the Dodgers, whenever that is, right? And what is it always about the Dodgers? Oh, this guy got hurt, that guy got hurt, you know, Buehler's on the 60 day, and they just keep rolling in a guy and you're going, where'd that guy come from? He's got really good stuff. The Rockies have to get to a place where their starting pitching depth is okay, so-and-so went down, because we all know pitchers get hurt. And the next guy you put up, it's not like a, you know, a hope and a prayer that he can get through the lineup twice before you're in the bullpen with two outs in the fifth inning, where you go, no, this guy's got big league stuff. He can get big league hitters out two, maybe even three times. And that's why Urania specifically is exciting. That's why for me, Feltner, who's still in an apprenticeship, is exciting, because the stuff is big league stuff. And that's why even a guy like Chad Kuhl, who by and large has had a nice season for the Rockies, is not super expensive, is a guy that maybe you try to keep in the fold. Austin Gomber was, what do you have, a 2-something ERA at Coors Field last year in his first kind of full year in the big leagues as a starter.
It was good.
You know, I know it's kind of been a rocky road a little bit this year, but we've seen Austin good. He was really good out of the bullpen the other day. I'm not getting rid of starting pitching if I'm the Colorado Rockies. That's just me.
Carl Kaufman's been doing some big things in AAA too. So again, you're right. You need that depth. So it's a good problem to have for sure. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And to your point about the Dodgers, they're throwing three. If the predictable pitchers is to be believed, they're going to be throwing three all-stars here at Coors Field this weekend with Tyler Anderson. Julio Urias is on Friday night, Clayton Kershaw on Saturday, and Tony Gonsolin on Sunday. So Rockies will be up against it against all those stars, none of which is Walker Buehler, a guy who's probably the best of all of them, were he not hurt.
They always have guys. And when's Dustin May come back? He's going to be back at some point this year, right?
Yeah.
And who's the guy? I'm doing a blank on his name. He's one of the top. Is it Perry? Who's the top, that great pitching prospect we saw earlier this year?
Ryan Pepiot?
No.
Bobby Miller?
Miller.
The top guy? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's another upper 90s guy that, you know, they do a great job. So, again, just to reiterate, if I'm the Rockies, I'm holding on to all of those pieces. The other guarantee or the other thing about trades for prospects, there's no guarantee. Now, if you could tell me that the Rockies are going to trade their James Shields and get Fernando Tatis back, then I'm all in. But Fernando Tatis was, what, 18 at the time of that trade from the White Sox? And, you know, the White Sox, you know, liked him. He was a teenager. And he becomes, you know, this phenom, as long as he can stay on the field, for an aged starting pitcher who had a marvelous career, but he was at the end in James Shields. There's no guarantee with prospects. Even this thing with Soto, and we're going to talk a lot about it in the coming days again, right? And whatever they end up getting, if in fact they consummate a trade, they're all prospects. And not all of them make it. And a lot of times, none of them truly make it at a large, impactful level. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, outside of the Miguel Cabrera deal, not especially that one, too. Look, when you trade a superstar player of a certain caliber, there's a good chance that you're not going to get back, you know, what you gave up. So, there's no way the Nationals are going to really be happy by trading Soto. They'll get some good guys, but it's still going to end up being very lopsided.
Yeah. Hey, Patrick, you remember this one well. When the Rockies, and it was unfortunate it came to this, Ubaldo Jimenez, who's the best starting pitcher the Rockies have ever had, and he had the greatest year a starting pitcher's ever had, particularly in that first half of 2010, Ubaldo Jimenez. So he gets traded to Cleveland. And the return that Dan O'Dowd got at the time was number one, a high number one pick in Drew Pomeranz, the number one prospect in the Cleveland organization at the time. Alex White, another number one pick, well thought of starting pitcher. So they're two top pitching prospects. And then there were a couple other players. I'm trying to forget. One was McBride. He was kind of a utility guy. He got to the big leagues. And there was another minor league arm. Anyhow, the point being is you got two exceptionally industry-wide, well-thought-of number one starting pitching, when I say number one, first-round picks, and in the case of Pomeranz, a high first-round pick, and White was a pretty high pick as well. Mm-hmm. And Pomeranz is still playing. He's dealt with injuries, but he's a bullpen piece now. Alex White, injuries, it never happened for him, unfortunately. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know. And I know Ubaldo didn't go on to, you know, continue to have the same level of career, but he was a serviceable starting pitcher for a number of years, Cleveland and also Baltimore. It's as I said a moment ago, it's full of the unknown when you get even well thought of prospects.
The agency that works for Joe Gardner is not happy that you forgot his name in the Ubaldo Jimenez trade. He was a gaucho. So I'm sure Spilly actually has some Joe Gardner stories. He went to UC Santa Barbara. How about that?
I didn't know that. He correct me if I'm wrong. He never did get to the big leagues.
No, he did not. Unfortunately, he did top out at Double A with both Colorado, Atlanta, Chicago.
Yeah. And Matt McBride did get to the big leagues out of Lehigh. Matt McBride out of Lehigh. Am I right? He was an engineer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he was up for a couple years with the Rockies, 12, 14, and 15.
Okay.
Yeah, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So he's a PA guy from back east. But a guy who's out in Colorado, your guest this week, Lucas Gilbreth. Again, another great conversation. He's a guy that, Rockies aren't going to put him on the trade block, but how many teams would salivate over a lefty like Lucas Gilbreth? He's having yet another season. The sophomore slump is not impacting him at all. And he's been, you know, fantastic once again. And so that another great conversation on the Drew Goodman podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate the plug, Patrick. I know you've spent time talking to Lucas, and I think we all embrace him because he's a Colorado kid. But to your initial thought on him, he's really good. He's mid-90s. He's got deception. He's got toughness. He also has, I think, and he'll tell you this, and I think he alluded to this on the podcast in watching Josh Hader, he goes, I got to use my slider more. It's an underutilized pitch, and it's a plus pitch for him. So the Rockies did a really nice job of converting him from being a starter when he was at the University of Minnesota and initially in pro ball to, you know, there's no lefty specialist anymore because of the rule stating that you have to face at least three. But he's a bona fide plus side setup guy right now. And who knows, maybe down the road he can be a closer. So, you know, good for the Rockies and most importantly, good for Lucas Gilbreth, who's emerged. He's one of the, you know, in the season right now where the Rockies are 9 games beneath .500, he's one of the nicer stories this year for them.
He's quietly become like a leader. He's like one of the young leaders. He almost reminds me of like a young Daniel Bard. If that's what, you know, 10 years earlier, that might've been what Daniel Bard was like. You know, I'm sure you know the whole story with the Crocs and everything like that. Like he spearheaded that, you know what I mean? He's very well liked amongst the guys. And so it's great. And then, you know, you also get into his hockey playing career, and you know, he did a couple things with a few NHL players that you get into by name again. Those are the Easter eggs for why you need to go and download and listen to the Drew Goodman podcast. But that was cool, you know, talking about his hockey career and breaking some things down there.
He's, again, you know this, Patrick. He's a really good conversationalist. He's a good guy. He's a fun guy to talk to. He's a bright guy. And I think more people, as they get to know him, and I think people feel like they know Kyle Freeland, you know, the hometown kid more, because, you know, Kyle's a starter. Kyle's been around longer. Kyle was a first round pick. And, you know, people want to embrace Kyle naturally. Well, I think as they get to know the reliever from Legacy High School, they're going to go, man, good dude, fun dude, bright dude, really good, really good player also. So yeah, I had fun visiting with Lucas, and I think people will enjoy that conversation and get a lot out of it.
Have you figured out how he's quirky? Because we know all like left-handed people are a little bit out there. I mean, I'm one. I'm ambidextrous, but I write left-handed, so I got enough of that in me. Lucas is too normal for a lefty, kind of like Freeland. Freeland also a little too normal for a lefty.
Yeah, I mean, we did have a little left-handed conversation there at the end because he is kind of normal. But he had, and I'll tease this, I won't give it away, but he did have a one or two guys that he put in the honorary left-hander grouping of his team.
And they make more sense. We won't spoil that, but they make more sense. You go, yeah, that guy's got way more lefty vibe than Lucas does. So I like that award.
Can you imagine, Patrick, bugging the various bullpens around baseball and just eavesdropping on a third inning conversation, let's say, because the inherent nature of being a member of a bullpen, especially at the big league level, day after day, is whatever level of sanity you had going in, it is probably adversely affected, or at least affected in a way that you are now different, which is okay, in so many different ways. And so I think it would be really entertaining to just, you know, just put a microphone in there and just sit back and listen to whatever conversations they may have in the middle of a game and games they are playing and other avenues they may go down.
You need to get an executive producer credit on the next iteration of This Week in Baseball. Cause I mean, that would be like Hard Knocks too, a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Hear what they got going on. I missed This Week in Baseball. Think, you know, we got to bring that back here. You can be the host. We'll mic up the guys in the bullpens, do all kinds of crazy things.
This week in the bullpen. We feature the Colorado Rockies group. It's headed by 37-year-old Daniel Bard and Ulster's veteran Carlos Estevez, who's larger than life, who's known as a big teddy bear. He throws 100 miles an hour. And there's the newest member of the
There we go. I will send you the video of this so you can use that when you're shipping that out, getting your resume. You're the host. You got my vote. So it's good to go.
We got it. Now we need some dollars behind it.
We do. I mean, This Week in Bullpen. That's
this
it.
This Week in Bullpen. Yeah.
I think we can get it going. All right, we'll workshop it. I know a couple of people who run a podcast network, so maybe we could actually get that done.
You do. Right.
Awesome. Follow him on Twitter at DrewGoodman42 and make sure you're downloading. Just subscribe to the Drew Goodman podcast so you get it first thing Thursday morning. And you know what's very common, like on YouTube, or if someone posts an article, you say first one, like you're the first one who makes a comment on it. See if you can beat me. Subscribe to the Drew Goodman podcast, and then when it comes out, listen to it and say first one, and see if you can beat my time, because I'm always there.
Here's how good you are and how wonderful a friend you are. You have listened to it consistently before I've even air checked it. So bless you, my friend.
I got your back. Don't worry. Make sure you've got our back by following us on Twitter at @DNVR_Rockies. I'm at Patrick D. Lyons, and also pay some attention to at the Susie Hunter on Twitter. It's been great. It's been fun. But you know what they say about momentum, Drew? Do you?
You're only as good as your next day's podcast, except for Friday, because you don't have one the next day.
Great point.
Yeah.